Hello.
Go on, go on, just walk away. Go on, go on, your choice is made. Go on and disappear. Go on away from here.
Well, that makes me sad. What do you want me to go away from here?
Come on, hit me with the next bit.
Hit you with the best shot? With my best shot?
That is such a classic song that I have not heard in ages. In Between Days by The Cure. Don't know if you know it, but oh my God.
I was never too big into The Cure.
Classic.
I'm sure.
Classic.
The Cure would have been what, mid-80s?
Yeah, right around there.
Yeah, that's before my time, dude. I was a wee lad.
I hear you, but they also put a lot of Cure songs in television and movies. So.
Oh yeah, for sure.
It leaked into your head one way or another.
1976. Jesus Christ.
Yeah, but they didn't get popular till the early, mid, late 80s.
Yes.
Hey.
Very good.
What is happening?
I'm so tired, dude.
Can I give you a before? Because I want to hear all about your trip. I'm dying to hear. Dying. But can I need to officially state an apology.
Uh-oh.
Yes.
To whom?
Legionnaires.
Uh-oh.
This is the formal apology by one Nick Wetmore. And this apology goes out to the CW network. Yes, I've mocked you many a times by only having good-looking people in your shows. Did I this week just happen to run across the new commercial for your new series, Nancy Drew, and instantly fall in love with it? Yes, I did. Were there any ugly people in that entire commercial? No, there weren't. But I still fell in love with it. CW, please take me back into your arms.
Lucky for you, this episode brought to you by the CW.
What?
Get all your favorite shows with the most beautiful people in the world doing sexy things with their sexy faces and sexy buttocks.
Mm.
Head to your local TV guide to find out how to watch the latest episodes of all the fantastic CW shows like Arrow, The Flash, Legends of Tomorrow, Riverdale, Nancy Drew, The 100, and more. Thanks for sponsoring this episode of The Nerdy Legion. It's good, huh?
Yeah, that is that commercial was so good.
I think they accepted your apology, Nick.
Oh, God, I can only hope. I can't wait till this episode airs. I need to let them know. I'm sure they're hanging with bated breath and on pins and needles.
I'm sure they are. They're like, oof. Will they accept their sponsorship? I don't know. I think the answer might be yes.
Oh, I hope so.
Mm-hmm. What's up, man?
Oh, man. I just can't wait to hear about your weekend at Go-Go.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. Did people have bad barbecue? Did people drink too much?
Listen, you forget Ronnie is a simple man.
True.
Okay. We pretend to be simple people. Ronnie is truly a simple man. He is like the modern day Jesus Christ superstar.
Ooh.
He's very humble and never says bad words. Never tells terrible hashtag dad jokes.
Ooh.
Yes. So, but no, it was good. So I was in Missouri for 4 days. Well, 3 days, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Cause I got there Friday morning. Aaron Bell, friend of the show, Aaron Bell, was there Thursday evening, apparently very late because his flight was delayed.
Yes.
And Mr. Hammonds, Mr. Dwan Hammonds, in typical Dwan Hammonds fashion, showed up about 2 hours before the wedding. and he was still asleep. His wife had to carry his sleeping baby bottom to get dressed.
Oh, no.
I made all that up. None of that is true.
Okay. All right.
But Ooh. He did get there like 6 hours before the wedding.
Wow.
Yes. Well, you know, he's a busy man.
He likes to make an appearance.
Yeah. He's got to coach all them kids.
That's true.
He's doing the Lord's work.
He is. So, I'm not going to dispute that.
Yes. So it was actually very good. The wedding was in the smallest town I've ever been to in my life.
Well, I guess you shouldn't say the name of the town.
I can say what town where the wedding was.
Okay.
I'm just not going to say the name of the town where Ronnie lives.
Okay.
So the name of the town is Higby. It's a ginormous town of roughly 300 people.
Wow.
I didn't see much there, to be honest. There were lots of fields and cattle and wineries. I did not know this. Missouri is apparently wine country. Did you know this?
Wow.
Nobody told me. Ronnie lives there. He didn't tell me. What's wrong with him? You know how much boxed wine I could have purchased had I known this in advance?
And you have the big truck. You could have transported it all home.
Dude, I'm telling you. I'm telling you.
Is this a one stop sign town?
Yes, and the stop sign was right outside the wedding.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it looked pretty. I saw the pictures of the location of the wedding. It looked really pretty.
Yes, Ronnie took a bunch of pictures. For anyone that wants to stalk Ronnie and find out how our weekend went, you can go follow at Rumbar316 on Twitter and stalk all his pictures.
Mm.
And then send him like random messages so he can be like, who the f- is talking to me? Why are these people asking about my wedding? So yes, but it was great. So it was this winery or a distillery, excuse me. Mm-hmm. Skull Splitters.
Oh.
I can't remember what the other name of it is. It's got two names.
Gotcha.
I know it as Skull Splitters because the first year that we went to the Chicago Entertainment Convention Expo, what does it stand for? I don't fucking know. C2E2.
Yeah.
3 or 4 years ago, Ronnie brought me a bottle of Skull Splitters chocolate brandy.
Oh, that's where that was from. Okay.
Yes, from Skull Splitters.
Nice.
And at some other occasion, Ronnie got me a bottle of their wine as well.
Oh, he must love the Skull Splitter.
Well, so he coaches one of the Little League's teams. And so everyone in that town knows him because there are 300 people there. as it turns out, one of the families that he coaches, owns this distillery. So they've become good friends. Because Sweet. Of course, why wouldn't you become friends with someone that owns a distillery?
Of course.
Right? Makes that perfect sense.
Sounds like the dream.
It sounds exactly like the dream. Speaking of the dream, we're going to talk about Dale, but we'll talk about Dale later.
Oh.
But he was my favorite person in Missouri.
Oh.
So I arrived on Friday morning, mm-hmm. and we started getting stuff set up. Because the reception was Friday evening, and so the groomsmen that were there, so everybody but not Dewan Hammond, shame on him, mm-hmm. Went ahead and set up the tables at the reception room, and we went to meet up with the guys for the chairs for the wedding, because the wedding was outside, and a bunch of other stuff. And then we had the rehearsal dinner / wedding rehearsal that evening. So we were all there, minus the one Hammond. I was like, dude, just follow my lead. Because, of course, he had no idea, because he's too busy to show up to the wedding rehearsal.
Oh, yeah.
Anyways. But, so for the rehearsal, we kept it simple, bro. You know what we had to eat? Take a guess.
I don't know. Barbecue.
Nope. Little Caesar's Pizza.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. So, that was fine.
Sure.
I'm not huge into Little Caesar's Pizza, so I only had one piece.
But like last episode, at least it wasn't Pizza Hut, right?
You got it, baby.
There you go.
So, but in the meantime, I mean, because we were there for hours, and Ryan was there, who is one of the distillers. I think the place, I'm trying to think who owns the place. I want to say his dad does, but maybe his brother does. I don't remember. It doesn't matter. He was there. Ronnie was upset because he was not going to be bartending at the wedding. Because he apparently he's the best bartender they got there. But of course the guy was not going to be there because he was going to a gay cruise in the Bahamas.
Oh, nice.
Which is funny because I think Ronnie may have told me at one point, but I forgot. And I saw the dude and like, I don't think anything about it because he's wearing like camouflage hunting pants and like, Carhartt boots and like a gray shirt. You know what I mean? Like a thermal shirt and in a camouflage cap. And I was like, looks like a southern boy. You know what I mean? Like a good old boy. We got those left and right here in the Carolinas. Until, of course, he started telling us stories. And I was like, ah, yes, now it comes out. But he was fantastic. Mm. He was funny as shit. Ronnie's like, you want to get a drink? I was like, yeah, I guess. So we went up there, and he's like, what do you want? I was like, I don't know, surprise me. So rule number one of Fight Club, you never tell the bartender to surprise you because shit gets real.
Mm.
So he gave me a
– this is a distillery.
Yes. So,
yeah.
Yes. But they have a tasting room.
What are they distilling?
I'll get to that in a second because I'm about to tell you what I had.
Okay.
So I had a little bit of sweet tea moonshine.
Ooh.
That was delicious.
Of course.
Delicious. I'm not huge at the moonshine because when I first moved to the Carolinas in, I don't know, 02, 03, I was dating this girl and she took me to this party. And of course, this being the Carolinas, and the school that I was attending being in a small town, there was a lot of moonshine going around. And this is before the state legalized moonshine. It's legal to make and sell now. Back then it was not. So you always got it in, you know, the mason jars.
Right.
But I pulled up and everyone was super friendly. And they're like, oh, you're from New York. You never had moonshine. You should try this moonshine. I was like, I don't know what the hell moonshine is, but all right. Like, I've been drinking for years by this point. You know what I mean? I thought I was an expert.
Oh,
boy,
no.
Boy, was I wrong.
That's a whole different thing.
Yeah, boy, was I wrong. They opened the jar of moonshine for me. I smelled it. And I was like, it smells pretty strong, but whatever. I took a sip of this corn moonshine, and boy, whole body was on fire. But that was an experience. But the sweet tea moonshine, very delicious. Like, you could barely taste the alcohol.
That's dangerous.
It is. I think there must be something about distilling some kind of alcoholic product and making it taste like tea.
Mm.
Because I think I've talked about before on this show, we have a distillery in the Carolinas called Firefly. I think they're out by Myrtle Beach, somewhere around that area. Mm-hmm. And they have the most delicious sweet tea vodka, which is also very dangerous. Because, matter of fact, I traded this tip with the bartender. If you do a shot of the sweet tea vodka, a shot of water, and a teaspoon of sugar, it tastes like McDonald's sweet tea. Now, some people may not know what McDonald's sweet tea tastes like because I guess they don't have sweet tea nationwide at McDonald's. I don't know. We have sweet tea at our McDonald's here because this is the South, baby. You put 3 pounds of sugar in everything.
Right.
I'm surprised it's not fried, to be honest with you, because we do that too. But so sweet tea moonshine, very good. I think it was like 80 proof, so 40%.
Wow.
And you couldn't taste it. Oh, you know what I mean? So that's dangerous. He gave me a couple of shots of some of the other shines they had there, all very good. And then he brought out this this bottle. Didn't show me what it was, but he's like, I'm going to make you – I can't remember what the name of the thing was. I'm sure Ronnie knows. Too bad he's not on the show.
Mm-hmm.
But he's like, yeah, I'm going to make this drink. You guys try it. So he makes it, and he starts like talking about it and like the different flavors and like look at – because it's like a layered drink. It's like 5 or 6 different kinds of moonshine.
Oh, boy.
And I taste it. delicious. Still can't taste the moonshine. I'm like, what's happening here? Like, am I super drunk? Have I lost my sense of taste? But it was great. It was delicious. So I downed that. And then he showed me like some of the other ones that I hadn't taken shots of. And one of them was really good. So I bought a bottle. Matter of fact, I bought a bottle of the sweet tea moonshine and I bought a bottle of this other thing, which is a whiskey, which as you know, Nick, I am not a whiskey person.
Right.
I hate whiskey.
Oh.
The first time in my life that I was inebriated, I was 14 or 15. And myself, my friend Alex, whose house we were staring at, and my friend Lonnie were having a like a dude sleepover. And his parents were out of town, so he broke into the liquor cabinet, brought out a bottle of Jack Daniel's Black Label, and we played GoldenEye, the greatest game of all time. Well, second greatest behind Avoid the Noid, of course. And got super wasted. And so from the age of 14 or 15 until about, I'd say 27, if I even smelled whiskey, I would just throw up. Like, I wouldn't even have to put it in my mouth.
Oh, boy.
Which is fine, like, in New York, because people don't really drink a lot of whiskey at bars there. But down here, this is the South, baby. You know what I mean?
Oh, God.
Bourbon left and right.
Hell yeah.
So that was interesting. But anyways, so it was a whiskey. And
so
I'm looking.
What sold you on this whiskey?
So I'm going to tell you the whole story of this whiskey.
Yeah.
Because I thought that was hilarious. But then the whiskey was really good. It tasted like Fruity Pebbles.
Whoa.
So as I mentioned previously, this guy is gay. And his brother is the other distiller. Mm-hmm. And he also makes like batches of whiskeys and like other stuff. And so he made like a straight whiskey. Okay. Mm-hmm. And he explained like why it had to be called straight whiskey and it couldn't just be called whiskey. Apparently like there's really strict rule, I don't know if they're laws or regulations or rules or what. But there's like strict whatevers, when you make different kinds of alcohols. And for whiskey, it has to be 80 proof.
Mm.
Because of the way that they do the distilling and all that, they can't guarantee that 80 proof. And a lot of their batches can go up to 121 proof. And so that, right?
Wow.
For the uninitiated, that would be 60.5% alcohol. Whatever the proof is, just half it. And so they called it straight whiskey. And I tasted it. Tastes like whiskey. I did not like it. But this other one, delicious, Fruity Pebbles. And so he's like, and you know, because my brother made the straight whiskey and I'm gay, I had to make gay whiskey. And so that's what it was. It's on the label. Matter of fact, I should take a picture and put it on Twitter.
Yeah.
It's called gay whiskey. And the bottle's cool. It's, like a pastel blue with like pinks and stuff on it. I think there's like a skull in there.
Nice.
And it says gay whiskey on it.
Nice.
And it's delicious.
Is there any burn to it?
There's a little bit of a burn.
Okay.
There's a little bit of a burn. So that night, I had everyone try it.
Sure.
And I don't know if it's the fact that, I may or may not have drank almost the entire bottle of Sweet Tea Moonshine Friday. or just like the fact that it was super cold in Missouri.
Oh, yeah.
Or what it was, but I didn't really think there was much of a burn to it. Like, there is some burn, but it's not like the whiskey burn, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's much milder. Maybe I should be drinking some gay whiskey right now, I don't know.
Oh, maybe.
I thought about having a shot ready and then playing some kind of drinking game, but then I changed my mind and made tea. Yeah, I'm sorry. It happens. Let me, matter of fact, take a sip of this tea because it's delicious.
So now, did they have, since it's a distillery, is their main thing moonshine or is it whiskey?
No, they just do like different batches of stuff.
Oh, okay.
They don't have
a signature. This is our signature XYZ.
Yeah, they try different things. If like something's really popular, they might make another batch. But it's just like everything's small batches.
Neat.
Matter of fact, Dale. The guy's dad showed us around the distillery. I think that was Friday night also. Maybe it was Saturday morning. And we got a tour of the place. We got the tour of his tool collection, which was awesome. I'll get to that in a minute. And, sure. And they showed us the back where, like, did they still the stuff? And, matter of fact, they had just replaced their still the night before, and were brewing their first batch on that new still, Saturday morning. I'm trying to think what it was he said. I think they were doing more sweet tea vodka, actually, or more sweet tea moonshine.
Wow.
It was popular, dude. Like, I bought a bottle, Duan bought a bottle. Like, people were coming in and out doing tastings. Like, everyone was walking out with a bottle of sweet tea moonshine.
Yeah.
So the old still that they had was, I don't know, like, how to determine how big a still is. But I would say, like, it couldn't have been more than, I don't know, 10, 15 gallons. It was small.
Did it look like a water heater?
It looked old school. It looked like, remember, I don't know if you remember this. You know, like those old, like metal milk barrels they used to have?
Yeah.
Okay. It looked like a big version of that.
Huh.
The new Sweet. Still though, very nice. Like stainless steel. Had like all these gauges and stuff on it. He explained to us like something about the evaporation of it. There's like different glass lenses on the still, like the pipe that goes up on the still. And then, like, you know, when it's ready, depending on like where the evaporation is on these glass gauges and stuff. Really interesting. I learned a lot about distilling this weekend. I had no
idea.
There's
quite the science to it, for sure.
It's crazy. Especially considering when I think distilling, I think of like rednecks in the woods making moonshine. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But there is a term called redneck engineering, and there's a good reason for that.
Mm-hmm.
There is very good reason for that. That is not a derogatory term, by the way. In case anyone listening is a redneck and gets upset, go fuck yourselves. So yeah, really nice. I almost stole something from there, Nick.
Oh, no.
I almost did. Right next to the bar in the tasting room.
Yeah.
There was a very large picture of the Batman 66 cast.
Oh.
Signed by Adam West and Burt Ward. And I was like, oh my God. I might need to take this home.
That's just there in the bar?
Yeah, just chilling right next to the bar.
I thought that was like Ronnie's wedding present or something.
No, that would have been my wedding present.
Oh, no.
Oh.
Now is this place, where were you guys staying at? Was it close? Is it in this distillery? Where are you guys staying?
So we stayed, I would say it's like a 20-minute drive from there.
Boy, how the hell did you even make it back to your place if everyone's lit?
Well, oddly enough, I was not drunk when we left.
Really?
Yes.
Wow.
I was like, should I just get another bottle of sweet tea moonshine? Like, yeah. Like, that night, went home, or went to the hotel. Actually, I got some Arby's.
Oh, God, yeah. Now, walk me through that. Now we're talking.
I'm trying to think.
Did you order off the Oktoberfest menu?
No. I got my usual. I ordered the classic cheddar with a large Diet Coke, no ice.
With the onion roll.
No. Is it an onion roll? It doesn't taste like onions.
Yeah, it's an onion roll.
Is it?
If it's beef and cheddar, yeah.
Oh, I never paid attention.
Unless it's one of those king size ones that come in like the more like hoagie style roll.
No, it's definitely a bun. All right, maybe it is an onion thing. I never paid attention. They're not very oniony.
Yeah, it isn't very oniony, but it is. It is supposed to be that. Any horsey sauce, Arby's sauce? What are you throwing on that beef and cheddar?
Listen, I had this conversation with one Mr. Aaron Bell.
Yeah.
Because they did not have Arby's in New Jersey, apparently.
What? Did you take Mr. Aaron Bell?
I didn't. Not that night. He did get breakfast there the next day.
Breakfast?
Did he go there? No, he went to Hardee's for breakfast. Never mind.
Okay.
But I told him he should go, and we were talking about it. Yeah. And I told him, I said, the one thing you must remember regardless of what you order at said Arby's. Do not, under any circumstance, get any garbage sauce.
What?
The only sauce that matters is horsey sauce.
Oh, I don't know if I agree with that, because sometimes that Arby's sauce is fabulous.
Nope. It's all about the horsey sauce. You get two packets of horsey sauce.
Yeah, yeah.
One packet goes in your sandwich.
Mm-hmm.
One packet goes on your wrap. And so you take a bite, and then you dip into the horsey sauce. Just a little bit. A little bit.
Sheesh.
Yeah.
Wait, so you just got a beef and cheddar and a drink?
Yeah, and horsey sauce.
But what about the potato cakes?
No, I got the curly fries.
What?
Yeah, bro.
Those are the worst curly fries.
Oh, my God. Are you kidding?
I am not kidding.
Maybe in Chicago. Here, they're delicious.
No way. No way. It's all about the potato cakes. You got to be kidding.
I don't know about that.
And did you get a milkshake?
No.
Why?
It was like 11 o'clock at night.
So what?
I'm not going to have a beef and cheddar and a milkshake. What am I, an animal?
What are you, too good for a black cow milkshake at 12 o'clock at night? Come on now. Stop. Let's just say mistakes were made at Arby's at 12 o'clock at night.
Let me ask you, does Arby's have good milkshakes?
Yes.
Really?
Yes.
I've never had a milkshake from there.
They do.
I might have to try that.
For fast food, I mean, come
well,
on.
Sure.
Let's pump the brakes a little bit.
You know here. Who's got the best milkshakes?
Sonic?
I don't know if you... all our Sonics shut down.
Oh, wow.
They went out of business. Matter of fact, the last one shut down like a couple of weeks ago.
So you can't get the deep-fried Oreos with a sundae now?
Nope.
Because that's their new thing right now.
Is it?
Yep.
Nope, all of ours shut down.
Dang.
Mm-hmm.
Were they replaced by A&W? Oh.
No, they were replaced by abandoned buildings.
Oh, that ain't right.
yeah, all our Sonics shut down. Most of the Jack in the Boxes shut down.
What?
Yep.
Oh my God, how could you let those close?
Dude, that was my drunk food when I was, after college.
Yeah.
When I was living with my Marine buddies.
Of course.
I think I've told that story. They told us to start calling ahead because we ordered too much of the junk menu. You know what I mean? It'd be like, get us 20 tacos and like 30 orders of macaroni bites, 10 orders of jalapeno poppers. They're like, you need to call ahead next time. Like,
see, this all checks out. There were no mistakes made with this Jack in the Box order. Now, what were you saying about the best milkshake?
Oh, so the best milkshake, I'm assuming you have them in Chicago, is at Brewster's.
We do not have Brewster's. Well, there's a couple locations, but I ain't driving no 50 minutes for Brewster's.
Mm. So,
no.
You know, Brewster's makes their ice cream fresh in the store.
Oh, interesting.
See?
Did not know that.
So not only is it the best ice cream, but the best ice cream also makes the best milkshakes.
I see that logic.
Mm-hmm. So you might not want to, but if you're near one, do yourself a favor and get a milkshake. My go-to at Brewster's, mint chocolate chip milkshake.
Oh, boy. Fancy. Very fancy.
So that was Friday. We also moved the tables in the reception hall, I think about 84 times.
Oh my God. Why is that?
So, the groomsmen were all there. We were getting the place set up. We got all the tables out, put the tables out, arranged them, put the chairs around them. Everything was set. Then the bridesmaids start showing up. I think we need to, minimalize this section of the room. Make sure there's the blah, blah, and maximize the space and the feng shui over here. And I'm like, bro, we already did this. So the first, like, you know, three dozen times, it was cool. We're like, yeah, we'll move this table 3 inches that way. But then it's like, let's just flip the whole room, like, backwards. And that's when we're like, we're going to go outside and take a couple shots. We'll be back later.
You're like, I don't have my wife here, so I don't need to listen to any of this. I'll be out with my moonshine.
Mm-hmm. And playing some golf game, I can't remember.
Golden Tee?
Not Golden Tee.
Dang it.
Golden Tee is fantastic.
Yeah, with the big ball.
This is like cowboy golf. Okay.
Oh.
So in front of the distillery, there's like a little porch area. So there's like the posts, you know? Mm-hmm. And on these posts, there are like poles sticking out of them. On the poles are long strings attached to them. And at the end of each string, there is a round metal ring.
Mm.
On the posts, there are eye hooks. And so the point of this golf game, just like golf, is to get the metal ring into the hook.
But I don't know how many times you've played golf, but never in the history of golf did you have to get a ring onto an eye hook. To let you know.
Think about like horseshoes or like something like that. It's like horseshoes.
Yeah. Okay, is that better? Yeah, for sure.
Well, except the terminology is golf. So like some of the quote unquote holes are like par 17 or like par 25. Cause it's hard.
Sure.
I'm
surprised they didn't have frisbee golf.
There wasn't a frisbee golf.
Yeah.
I learned about this cowboy golf. Of course, classic game. Cornhole was there.
Oh God. Yeah.
Classic. Also a golf-like game.
Sure.
I also learned to play Stumpschlager.
I think I've played Stumpschlager.
Have you?
This sounds very familiar. Give me a rundown of this.
Very well. As you can imagine, a tree stump is involved. Hence the name Stumpschlager. But you have a piece of a tree stump on a table, and then depending how many players, you get that exact number of stainless steel nails, and you nail the nails into the stump, one for each player, and the point of the game is to hammer said nails all the way into the stump so that no part of the nail is sticking out of the stump.
This sounds like very much a porch game from a place that sells very high alcohol percentages.
Well, you would think so. However, Stumpschlager is actually a trademarked and copyrighted game.
Oh my God.
Uh-huh.
Wow.
So we probably shouldn't even be talking about this live on air because we might get sued for using the name.
Maybe it was already on Shark Tank. We don't know.
That's possible.
Yeah.
It's possible. We don't know. But anyways, it's very fun. There's some rules. Like, you can't, like, sit there and aim the hammer before you go. You can't lift the hammer or your hand above your ear, et cetera, et cetera.
You completely pulverize one of your fingers, then you automatically win. You know, the regular rules.
There you go. Finger schlagen.
Yeah.
Okay? We got it.
That's hilarious.
Yes. Stumpschlager, quite fun.
Can I go – sorry, I'm hyper-focused for whatever reason. Can I go back? One question about the wedding, one question about you coming up to the wedding.
Yes.
The question about the wedding. In this town of Higby?
Yes.
Since there's only 300 people that live there, could Ronnie possibly become the mayor of Higby?
Funny enough, Ronnie had dignitaries at his wedding – because the mayor of Higby showed up.
And he that was supposed to be a joke, and I love it.
No, this is a true fact. He was even wearing his mayoral medal on his lapel.
Did he have a sash on, like a beauty contestant?
No sash.
That said mayor of Higby.
No sash, but he was wearing a suit, no tie.
Did he have a very tall hat on?
No tall hat, but he did have a cowboy hat on.
Of course. How many people who came to this wedding, out of towners, you especially the Nerdy Legion crew, how many of you came out of this event either buying a cowboy hat or cowboy boots?
Neither. However, I do own a cowboy hat.
Of course you do, your Barton Friday.
It is technically not a real cowboy hat. We bought it in Louisiana.
Yeah, that's not a cowboy hat.
Before my wife got pulled over and she can no longer drive in the state because there's probably a warrant for her arrest there. She never paid the ticket. But we bought one there.
Gotcha.
And it's a cowboy hat, but it doesn't look like one. Because, you know, cowboy hats are made of, like, leather or whatever.
Yeah.
This one's made out of, like, I don't know, maybe straw? I don't know.
Before heading back into this topic, but staying on this specific topic, I got to throw something in right now. Because I would have never thought in the history of the Nerdy Legion podcast would we be talking about cowboy hats. But we happen to be talking about cowboy hats. And this,
Nick, I don't want to interrupt you, but you have obviously not paid attention to the show for the past 216 episodes.
Possibly. But to go ABC's XYZ and to get the cowboy hats, especially 3 weeks after this happened, spectacular. It's like you read our show notes and you're teeing it up for me to relay this story. Julie the cruise director, since the day I've known her, there are things that she hates. Let me rattle off a couple of them for you. John Cougar Mellencamp.
Oh my God.
Neil Diamond and country western anything. Country western music, country western fashion, any of it. Garbage. Which, of course, hurts young Nick because, you know, I spent some quality time in Muskogee, Oklahoma. I have called myself an Okie from Muskogee because of that song. So It's sort of, you know, it burns me a little bit. But, you know, she's come around on Southern food.
Well, see, the thing is, she's from the Empire.
Yes, her mother is off the boat from England.
Yes.
Her sister married someone who was off the boat from Ireland.
See?
They, for her to even venture into barbecue and Southern food is a shocker. Mm-hmm. Her mom, growing up, her mom would make food that, where my mom would burn the hell out of the food and or dry out any meat where you're gasping for any gravy or ketchup to put on said meat to moisten it. Her mom would make food from the Empire, and yet there would be no lick of seasoning ever in that. If she would make shepherd's pie, forget about any type of seasoning, herb, even salt and pepper. It's just bland as bland can get. It is from the Empire.
Well, you know,
not today, but I mean, stereotypical. She is the stereotypical English cook.
So one of my coworkers just went on a trip to the UK. Actually, he went to London. Thanks. And he said the British food has gotten much better. They actually use a pinch of salt now.
No, the British food's fantastic. It's definitely has come around the last decade. But I'm just saying stereotypically. I mean, we're talking about an 86-year-old woman. Absolutely. So guess what? She grew up with no herbs, no seasoning. Doesn't know what basil, doesn't know what cilantro, oregano, salt and pepper is. No clue. You can't find that stuff in her house. And still to this day, can you find an ice cube in that house? Never. God, never. Never. Which for me, I live on ice cubes. So that's a killer.
We learned an important lesson. That lesson is British people hate America.
Well, I wouldn't go that far. So anyway, those were the three things. Neil Diamond, John Cougar Mellencamp, country western. Always just stamp it out. And if I would talk about country western music, if I would talk about the fashion, I would always be like, I don't mind those cowboy shirts with like the knit collars and arrows, that type of thing. I like that. That looks all right. I'm into that. Okay, that looks cool. And she would always just give the most dramatic Tina Fey eye roll that you could ever imagine. Well, all of a sudden, she becomes a Voice fan, the television show The Voice. And America's sweetheart, Blake Shelton's on that.
Of course.
of course, she starts slowly coming around on Blake because he's ever lovable. And somebody who she's always loved, Gwen Stefani, all of a sudden starts dating this guy. So all of a sudden, within the last 2 years, she'll be hitting through the YouTube and searching for stuff and playing stuff. And, you know, it'd be like Jimmy Fallon with like Blake Shelton on Jimmy Fallon. So she'll play that clip. And then all of a sudden she starts playing like his music videos. And I'm like, what's going on here? What, you don't like country western? What the hell's on here? And I'm just like freaking out. And she's just like, oh, it's Blake. Oh, he's cute. Oh, well, all of a sudden, Miss Stefani starts dating him. And now this is her second season of The Voice that she's doing this season. And leading up to it, all of a sudden, Blake Shelton's rubbing off on Miss Gwen Stefani. And she's wearing, I wouldn't call it country western outfit. But all of a sudden, she's wearing something that looks like high-end fashion put through the blender of like country western, but like done by like, oh, that's a country western knit shirt, but done by Gucci, you know, that type of thing.
Interesting.
Or it's like cowboy boots that are bright red with like sparkles on them or whatever the hell it is, but they look like, holy shit, those are like $10,000 cowboy boots.
Uh-huh.
All of a sudden, and this goes back all the way to your beginning point with the cowboy hat. Last week, okay, you know where I am. Like, we don't have tons of funds. So I don't care about fashion. My wife, she loves the fashion. But she also understands our position right now. She can't afford to go out and like, hey, it's the fall and I want to dress up and I want to get something new. We just can't afford that right now. So she's called it the fall is the season of accessories. So she's wearing her regular clothes, but she'll go to Amazon and buy like cheap knockoff stuff,
mm-hmm.
like Apple Watch bands. Like instead of spending $30 for a leather one or $50, whatever the hell they're called, she'll get knockoff ones that are color coordinated to her outfit, but are cheap plastic or cheap rubber for like, I think she bought like six bands for $6. So it's the season of accessories. So we get these small packages delivered from Amazon left and right. And they're always like, there's no weight to them because like, oh, I have a belt in there. Or, oh, I have like a beret for my hair. She gets this big package, but it's really light. And I'm like, what the hell's this? And she was getting them like here and there. And of course I'm home. So like I see packages coming in the house where before I never saw them, don't care. And I'm like, this thing's light. This is really big and light. What the hell's going on here? And she goes, oh, it was part of an Amazon Lightning, a flash deal. So I picked it up, and she proceeds to open it up, puts it on her head, and sure as shit, it's a cowboy hat.
No.
I was like, are you freaking kidding? And she's like, well, Gwen Stefani wore this really cute cowboy hat, and I thought, what the heck, I'll give it a try. What is going on here?
That's hilarious.
Oh, so now I'm like, all right, we're going to have to listen to Shiloh by Neil Diamond real soon because sooner or later you're going to come around.
Oh, that's hilarious. I just looked up Gwen Stefani's cowboy boots.
Yeah.
And you were a little off, Nick. They're only $3,367.
There you go. It's a price point that anyone can purchase.
Yes, her plaid shirt. Only $997.
Yes. Even you can be a Kacha Goo Goo girl. So it was crazy. But my next question, I needed to ask about Ronnie becoming mayor, so it's hilarious that you had a story backing that up. And going to and from in your truck,
mm-hmm.
Now that you've hit C2E2, quite a few times.
Yep.
But this time you're going even further.
It wasn't that much further. It's like still, 40 it more miles.
Yeah, but it is. Are you finding yourself venturing out and trying new places to eat at? Or are you like, that truck stop was pretty good last time, I'm going to stop there. And you find yourself stopping at the same place over and over.
I don't do that even. So the reason I like to drive as opposed to fly is not because I like don't want to spend the money. Because you're not really saving anything when you drive. You know what I mean?
Right.
Especially in my truck, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, I'd probably spend $200 in gas.
Sure, sure.
But the thing is, I don't know how much of this country you've traveled, but the United States is a very beautiful place.
For sure.
And when you're flying, you're stuck in this, like, little tiny cramped seat with, like, fat, stinky people and crying children and shitty food. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm, and mm-hmm, you can't see anything. All you see is clouds.
And, yeah, like, it's a, growing up, we went on a vacation once a year, always in the summer. The entire family piled into the car and went. The first time I ever flew was, God, senior year high school? And I flew by myself. That was the only, like, reason that I flew.
Mm-hmm.
It was because it was by myself, so my parents put me on the plane. I flew out to my cousin's place in Shawnee, Kansas, and then my aunt and uncle picked me up.
Mm.
But yeah, it's always been road trips because my dad loves the truck stops, mm-hmm, which I've gotten that from him, and my brother hates it. Like, he's one of those people that all he wants, unless you have to, like, poo or pee, we're driving straight through. Mm-hmm. And if you have to poo and pee, then we're stopping at a place that has food, and you better stock up then, because we're not stopping. Where I drive about every 40 miles, and I'm stopping to get out.
Oh, wow.
Just because I love the freaking truck stop experience. I love on the side of the road, right there is a great restaurant. I hate that McDonald's has taken over a lot of those spots. That mm-hmm. drives me crazy. So it's really fun to actually find a place. Like, I should have told you, on the way up there, because we went a similar route when we went to St. Louis a couple years ago. We went a similar route to get to St. Louis, and Ronnie knew of this diner, because I even brought it up at C2E2, because on our way to St. Louis, my wife, she knows how much I love homemade pie. Mm. And she looked up, like, best homemade pie in St. Louis or best homemade pie in Illinois. And it just happened to be on that route. And it was such a small, like, train track going through this small town, maybe two stoplights. It was very, like, Andy Griffith Show, Mayberry looking place. But she's like, I'm going to take you there because they say it's the best pie. And sure enough, I brought it up to Ronnie the first time I met him. And he's like, oh, no, I stopped there on my way to C2E2. Yeah, I know exactly what you were talking uh-huh. about.
Yeah, see, I don't do that, man. The thing is, when I'm doing these long trips, you know, like, Chicago's 12 hours. To get to Ronnie was about 13 almost. And being kind of in a time crunch, I mean, you know, if I'm driving 12 hours each way, that's one day just in driving.
Yeah. Right?
And it's not like I'm going for, like, 2 or 3 weeks, right? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I have 4 days.
Right.
So when I do these long trips in the truck, I don't like, oh, that place looks cool, let me go eat there. Oh, that looks cool, let me go eat there.
Trying to be as efficient as possible.
Exactly. So I only stop at the truck stops or, like, some gas station, right?
Sure.
That way I can get gas, pee, get a drink, and, like, whatever, a bag of chips or something, and just keep going.
Right, right, right.
But I would love to. I would love to, like, take an extra day, say, and, like, find cool spots along the way and do that. Matter of fact, if I hadn't had to be at work on Monday, I would have taken, like, a couple more days and just, like, kept driving west. You know what I mean? And then, like, just to see, like, sightsee for a day or two, and then, like, and then drive back. But yeah, I try to be efficient. I try to be efficient. But the driving experience is nice, and especially mm-hmm. when you're by yourself. I know some people don't like that, right? Because you want to be talking to people, maybe you get bored or whatever. Not me.
No, I love it.
I like that experience because, you know, having a wife and kids, and then at work I have a team of people that I work with. It's nice to not have any of that. You know what I mean? We're like, all you have to think about is how I'm getting from A to B.
Now, are you listening to podcasts? Are you listening to audiobooks?
So I didn't have enough podcasts. Shame on everybody. So I re-listened to an audiobook. And then on the way back, I listened to my podcasts. But yeah, usually, I mean, I have podcasts on 24/7, basically. When I'm at work, like, I always have one earbud in an ear, and I'm listening to something. But yeah, it's good. And, you know, like, I've been into this whole meditation thing, so, like, driving's a really meditative experience. And let me tell you, if you can focus on the road for 12 hours, that's a hell of a meditation. Your mind is very clear. So I dig it. I love taking long road trips like that. Especially by myself. I'd love to do one someday to like some random ass place. We'll talk about this later, but I'm taking my first archery lesson, in 2 days. And I want to set up some kind of trip next year where I go like in the effing boonies somewhere, like Montana. You know what I mean? Like, I'll drive to Montana, me and a pair of pants and my bow and arrow, and go to town. We'll see.
I like it. Mm-hmm. What inspired that, by the way?
Funny you should mention this. As you know, I've been talking about this for a while, that I wanted to learn to shoot a bow and arrow. And a couple weeks ago, I was going down a YouTube rabbit hole. Not on YouTube, by the way, because I don't support YouTube. But I do enjoy the videos. So I watch them on Invidious. I know I've sent you some Invidious links before.
Yes.
Anything that's on YouTube is on Invidious, because they scrape YouTube. So all the YouTube videos are on Invidious. Only thing is, Google's not tracking you. So one of the channels I've subscribed to is, How to Make Everything. This season of the show, they're doing it differently. Whereas before they would like try to make a certain thing on each episode, now they're doing like an overarching, theme for the season. And the theme is how to rebuild society from scratch. And so going from like making a simple like axe, for example, to I don't know, like making other tools from that stone axe to be able to make a copper axe, to being able to like hollow out a tree to make a canoe. And in the latest episode, or one of the latest episodes, I don't know if there's a new one out or not, they were making bows. And several different techniques of making bows. One was like, bundles of bamboo strapped together. They did one where like they actually chopped down a tree and split it and like made different kinds of bows out of that. And I was like, well shit, like I've been thinking about this archery thing for a while. Now this video came out. Maybe I should actually go and do this. And on the way back from Missouri, I tapped into my podcast and I listened to the Joe Rogan podcast. Not every episode, like when the comedians are on, I don't care too much about them. But like scientists and stuff like that, I love those. I think Joe does a pretty good job with the interviews. He had on his buddy, look up what the guy's name is, cause I can't remember. But he is a professional archer, Cameron Haynes. He's a professional bow hunter. I think he's got a TV show. It might be that, what's that show called? Meat Eater, I think.
I couldn't tell you. I don't watch TV.
It's on, I don't either. I've never seen the show. So he's got some show. And he's like one of the most famous bow hunters in the world, basically. And he had done some GQ interview before he went to do Joe Rogan. They had him criticize bow shooting techniques from different Hollywood movies. Yeah. So they did like Hunger Games, Brave, some De Niro movie. I don't know. There was like a 6 or 7 of them. And anyway, so they're talking about this whole thing. And of course, he's a bow hunter. And Joe Rogan's been like learning to shoot for, I think, like a year or two. Huh. The cool thing about Joe is he doesn't buy meat anymore. The only meat he eats is elk meat because he does 2 elk hunts a year. And I think that's pretty cool, like being self-sufficient like that. Granted, like the dude's got money to just be like, hey, I'm going to take a week off and go elk hunting. You know what I mean?
Right.
But it's still like a cool idea. I think, like Mark Zuckerberg, the Facebook guy, was one of the first people to like publicly talk about this. Cause he also hunts his own meat. And,
I think Ted Nugent was the first prominent person to talk about
But you would expect Ted Nugent to do that.
Sure.
Right? Like, you don't expect fucking Mark Zuckerberg to do this.
No.
Right. So anyway, so they're basically talking about like hunting and archery and this, that, and the other. And I was like, well, shit, like, this is the second time in 2 weeks that this is coming up. I gotta do this now.
Sounds like, when the universe is telling you to do something.
Yeah, synchronicity.
Yeah.
So I got home and I'm telling my wife about the trip and I was like, I think I'm going to finally take those archery lessons. And I mean, the good thing is, Nick, I have, an archery place quite literally a mile down the street from my house.
Nice.
One of the largest, bow hunting dealerships in, the Southeast, as a matter of fact. And they do lessons there. So I called them the next day and they're like, yeah, just come in. We'll talk, whatever. I was like, I don't have time to come in, but if we could just set something up, I would love to just learn. So they explained the whole thing, and basically like what I'm going to do is I'm going to go for an hour, and get some lessons from one of their coaches and, you know, shoot a few arrows or whatever and see if I enjoy it.
Nice.
Now, growing up, I was always a very rash person. And I think in some respects, I'm still a little rash. But I've gotten much better about certain things. You know, I used to be like, hey, I want to do this. I'm going to go do it. Now on certain things, I'm like, I really want to do this or I want to buy this. But do I like really want it? And I've gotten really good at being able to, I mean, you might not be able to tell from C2E2, of course, for those of you that were there. But I've gotten really good at like, if I really want this, let me just hold off for like 3 months. And if I still feel the same about it, then like, fuck yeah, I'm going to buy it. Right. Or I'm going to go do this.
Sure.
Cause like, it's been in my mind. I'm not like consciously thinking about it, but it's, you know, it's in the back of your head. And I think sometimes like you do your best thinking that way. Right. Cause you can kind of analyze in the background. And so
because we're removing the impulse.
Exactly. And so I think, because I've been thinking about this for months now, I'm just going to go ahead and try it out and see how it goes. I know DJ from the Brightside chat sent me a message on Twitter. Bill, Beer from Batpod sent me a message. They apparently both do the bow and arrow thing.
Nice.
So I got some good information from. But,
I think that
but
could
we'll
work really well with your meditative state as well.
So that's what DJ said, right? He's like, right. when you pick up the bow and the arrow and you aim it, and like that, like few seconds where you're focusing on your target and you're like becoming the arrow and trying to hit your target, it's like a really special feeling. You know what I mean? And I could totally see that.
Yeah, you're slowing everything down.
Yeah. So I'm really excited. I'm really excited
to try
this out.
That should be exciting. That's this Saturday?
Friday.
Friday, okay.
Yeah, well, yeah, Friday.
I can't wait to hear the results. How about that?
Me too.
I want to hear all about it. I think that's pretty fascinating.
Me too. I want to talk about them too, because every time I hear about like bow stuff, everyone's always got like compound bows.
Yeah.
You know, the bows that have all, like all the gears and wheels and crap on them.
Yeah, it all helps you with the tension and
yeah. Mm-hmm. And like I get it, but like I wanna learn to shoot like a real bow. You know what I mean? Like
right.
Old school.
Yes.
So we'll see. I'm gonna see what they tell me at this place, and how I feel. I'm sure like they've got both types, so maybe I'll see if they can let me shoot a couple different kinds of bows and go from there. But,
yeah, or even just to get, I mean, you're an information seeker, even just to have somebody with that expert knowledge level telling you, well, this is what I would use this bow for, and this bow is used for this, and this is why we use this one. Mm-hmm. Like that, even just that is interesting.
Yeah. Yes. So we'll see. I mean, I told you before, I want to do that fucking, there's like a boar hunt or something in like Hawaii. Mm. I want to do that.
That Brad did on Bon Appetit.
That's it.
Yeah.
Yes. Well, his was like unofficial. Like there's like a thing where it's like they have a camp and it's all set up and whatever. I want to do that. At the same time, I don't need to. Like I can go to my in-laws' property and there's wild boar all up in there.
So, yeah, you could hunt. You could hunt to your heart's content.
Yeah, and I mean, I got deer in my backyard.
You better buy a gigantic meat locker freezer.
Matter of fact, the deer may have read my mind. Because a lot of times, if I'm like working late or like I go grocery shopping late or whatever, and it's dark out when I get home, I've learned when I enter our neighborhood to go slowly, because there is a path near the entrance, and there's a pack of deer that always crosses, and it seems like they always fucking cross when I'm coming in. Well, last night I got home. I don't remember where I was. I went somewhere, and I was driving back home at like 9:30, and I slow down, turn on my brights like I always do, and sure as shit, there were the fucking deer at the head of the path. Except this time, they didn't jump out like they always do. They just hung out there. They're like, this motherfucker's gonna come hunt us now. I would not do that.
It's like a Stephen King story.
Maybe. What was that M. Night Shyamalan movie? Oh, God. You know what I'm talking about? Where, like, the trees are killing people? The Happening.
Yeah, yeah.
The Happening, yeah.
I just remember, I think it was either Peter Straub or Stephen King. There was there was a stretch of books, I want to say 4 or 5, that always had a scene of, like, deers not moving, just like right in front of the main character staring at him. Like there was just always that scene in like, God, it was at least 4 or 5 books in a row. And it's just like, oh my God, what the hell? Like what kind of dream got stuck in your head that it just, you have to continually have that scene in your book.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I agree.
I do feel like I missed my calling. I've even mentioned this to Liz, and the only reason I never went into it is I didn't know how to and I didn't know anyone. But I feel like I should have been a butcher.
Oh.
Like, I find that very fascinating. And for me now, it's like, if at all I can ever buy a full animal and break it down, not a full, like, even just like, instead of chicken legs or thighs, well, I'll just buy a whole chicken and then I'll break that down.
Yeah.
And use what I want on this dish and save the rest for moving on.
That's funny because I do that. You can always tell when my wife has been grocery shopping and when I've been grocery shopping.
Sure.
Because when I go, I buy a whole chicken.
Yeah.
And then I figure it out from there. When mm-hmm. she goes, there's like packages of breasts, packages of legs, packages of this. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, I always find it interesting and especially, and I think it just eggs me on even more because I see these like new butchers as well as butchering the meat. They're also like curing everything as well as making the sausages and salamis. And I'm just like, dang, that's what I should be doing. Just like that is fascinating. I want to learn more.
No, I'm with you on that. Matter of fact, I'm going to try to make some jerky this weekend. I'll let you know how that goes.
Nice.
'Cause Zoe wants to make her Halloween costume this weekend.
Ooh.
And I was like, I will help you do that, but I want to try to make beef jerky. So if you help me, I will help you.
Wow. Does she know what she wants to be?
Yes. Her personal comic book character creation, the Candy Queen.
Oh, I like that. That's a good name.
Yes, the Candy Queen. Matter of fact, she, it's so funny. So today I started a group for NaNoWriMo because November's coming up. Mm-hmm. Everyone listen up. November's right coming up. If you've ever thought about getting into writing, November is a great month to do it because everyone is tagging hashtag NaNoWriMo, the National Novel Writing Month. I think that's how it started, but like you can do anything. So Ronnie tweeted out something, but he was working on a script for a comic.
Yeah.
And as I mentioned in the last episode, I want to get more into writing stuff. Mm-hmm. And so I've been working on a novel for close to a year. I started another one about a month ago. And I have a couple comic book scripts in my head as well. So I started a group. There's about four or five of us. And we came up with a plan on how to do this because we want to have something either mostly completed or like completed enough where like you get a good chunk out of the way by December 1st. And I set this group up so we can do like editing sessions.
Nice.
So we're going to have like two deadlines in November, about 2 weeks apart. So when we get to a certain point, we can share that, get some feedback on the writing and the story and things like that, and make adjustments as needed. I think it'd be good.
Yeah, I like that October is Inktober, and I like November is writing. I mm-hmm. think that's neat.
Yeah. So what was I talking about, NaNoWriMo? There was some kind of reason. Oh, yes, Zoe. So we did that group, and so I go get Zoe because she had a soccer game tonight. By the way, undefeated.
Ooh.
And she's like, wait, before we get in the truck, I want to show you what I did. And I was like, what'd you do? She's like, I wrote my first comic book. And I was like, you are my child. So she made me pull it out of the book bag. So she wrote it, and her friend did the pencils.
Holy cow.
And it was hilarious. It was hilarious. It was like 8 pages long.
Mm-hmm.
And it was about a donut and, oh God, what was the other thing? Some other kind of pastry, I can't remember. And the donut had come up with this machine to hypnotize and convert all of these other pastries into donuts. And like the evil plot of the donut to get these other pastries to come to this party so that you can be turned into donuts.
Wow, that's great.
It was awesome. And then we got to the game early, so when we were there, she like started doing another comic or whatever. It was fun. And I was like, well shit, like my kid's doing this. Surely I can fucking do it. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Cause I have an English degree, Nick.
Congratulations.
Congratulations to you as well.
And, thank you.
So I'm excited, you know, like that's cool that my kid's into it because, you know, she doesn't read like comics, but she does buy a lot of graphic novels.
Great.
Like YA fiction graphic novels.
That's great.
Matter of fact, she and I are going to do an episode for Michael Sparkman's Bibliophile Adventures.
Ooh.
On this very own Nerd Legion Network. We're going to do a book together.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah. That'll come out at some point. Even though I'm retired from podcasting, I already had about 10 episodes planned. So I told Michael, I was like, look, I'm still going to do these 10 episodes. So don't even worry about that. So that'll be fun. But yeah, it was good. It was good.
Well, you can always be pulled out of retirement.
Well, and that's what I told everybody. I was like, look, it's not like I'm going to be disappearing. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Was that a conversation topic over the weekend?
No, not really.
Wow.
Not really. Cause I think after, I think Ronnie may have been the first one to know.
Because they didn't hear the episode where you announced it. That just came out.
So. Yeah, that came out today.
Yeah.
No, but they all already knew. They all already knew.
Okay.
So yes. Oh yeah, that's right. That did come out today.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm. I'm retired, everybody.
Yes, we know.
So, people are happy we're not retired from this show.
Are they? That's
good. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I saw a couple messages.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Which is weird, because we always like, I mean, we don't do this for anybody, you know what I mean? We do this so we can chit-chat every week.
Just hit the record button.
You know what this show is, Nick? I don't know what? If you did this in high school or like whatever, middle school maybe. You know, like, you like a girl, so you call the girl, and you're on the phone for, like, 6 hours.
Hmm.
Just talking about random nonsense.
Mm.
And then, like, maybe you fall asleep on the phone talking to this girl. That's what the show is.
I I mean, what do you write it? What do you, are you going through scenarios from Sleepless in Seattle? What are you doing here?
No, you never did that.
No.
Oh, come on. I did.
I ain't got time for that. Well, let's put it this way. If I liked a girl, I'm talking to her throughout the day. At some point at night, it's like, all right, we've talked ourselves out. and if I like, she already knows that I like her. There was never me calling girls and them like, does he like me? Doesn't he like? No, if I'm calling you, I like you.
Well, sure.
Yeah.
Sure. My favorite was the ones where like, God, you talk a lot. You know, maybe that's why I hate talking on the phone now.
But see, that's the thing. I would talk to them, and I'm very similar to you, where I had plenty of girls that I liked. And by me being bubbly and funny and a talker, and we'll talk about different topics and just be pretty natural with them, I got put in the friend zone many times, or the brother zone many times. And guess what? Once you're put there, you ain't getting out of there.
Mm.
You're there.
See, I became a master of the pretending not to care.
Oh, see, you're Mr. Emo. You're a little. All of a sudden, you're like, I'm going to go listen to my Chemical Romance.
That's leave right. Me alone. Hey, but you know, the pimp juice was strong.
But see, I didn't. It took about halfway through high school to realize, you know what? If you don't really care or not show as much interest, usually that's what brings them back around.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah, you learned it quicker than I did, for sure.
Oh, these guys all running late on my last podcast. Shameful.
What do you mean running late?
For Aftershock Central.
Oh, I thought you were done.
Tonight, I'm recording the last one tonight.
Nice. Yeah. All right. Well, tell me when we're done.
Oh, I will. I have a question for you.
But also, before we leave this topic of the opposite sex, and I know we do have female listeners, and this is embarrassing.
Way too many.
Do we?
Yes.
Oh, my God. No, this is going to be uber embarrassing. Oh, my God. It's
like 35% female.
Oh, geez. Ladies, please do not hit me up on social over this, because I know how embarrassing this is. My first girlfriend was freshman year. She was a sophomore. And I always tell you what's always my motto, men are stupid. Boys are stupid. I'm part of being stupid. So freshman year, I had this sophomore come up to me, and she pretty much told me straight to my face, hey, I like you. We should go out. Because I wasn't getting any of her hints whatsoever. And obviously she was laying hints down for like 3-4 weeks, and I was just clueless.
Mm.
So as soon as she said that, then I'm like, yeah, we can go out. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, we went out pretty much the entire year, except I was such a nervous Nelly that I never ever, we held hands, put my arm around her. Never ever was I even thinking about trying to kiss her. No clue, no idea. And that went on and we went to prom, and right after prom, she's like, you know what? This ain't working for me. I gotta move on. And I think it was pretty much like, you're not even trying to kiss me. You're not even trying to make any move. And I was just like, what? I had no idea because I didn't, like, there is no book. There is, like, I didn't have Nick Kroll's big mouth to, like, tell me about human sexuality or dating or anything like that. Like,
sure.
I had dumb, like, situational comedies that's like, oh, this is what the boys in Happy Days do. So this is how you date somebody. Like, I have no idea. I'm going off of dumb TV. And guess what? TV ain't telling me nothing. Oh, it was the worst. The worst. So stupid.
That's true. That's true. So I got a question for you.
Sure.
I don't know how long a topic this might be, so if we need to follow up next week, that's cool.
Uh-oh.
But today a book came out that got me thinking about this a little bit. And it's not X-Men Sexy Time, for anyone wondering. By the way, you should read that, Nick.
Sexy Time.
Yes. X-Men Sexy Time. So you have not read House of X, Powers of X, or the new X-Men. So let me briefly fill you in. There's like an inner circle of mutants that are like creating laws for the mutant nation because they're all living in Krakoa.
Nightcrawler
is in this inner circle, and one of his rules that Professor Xavier accepted was that mutants should procreate and make more mutants.
Makes sense.
Makes total sense. In X-Men, they have a base on the moon. I believe, actually, it's the Inhumans' old base. And I tweeted about this. There is a map of said base that Mr. Hickman provided. And it's a round base, and there's, like, habitation pods set up in threes. And three of those pods are set up for Jean Grey, Wolverine, and Cyclops. Of course, long time what's the term for that? Love triangle.
Yeah.
Their habitation pods are right next to each other, with Jean Grey's in the middle. And their pods are the only ones that have doors that connect each other to each other's rooms.
Oh.
So I think there's some freaky shit going on in there. You know what I mean? But have you not, since you haven't read it, you may not understand what I'm talking about. You should read it and then tell me what you think.
As you know, I only read Hickman in trades.
Sure. Fair enough. I think there's a hardcover coming out soon.
Yeah, I tried to read him, but it becomes so detailed and in-depth that I lose those finer points.
I hate to make a terrible pun, but this X-Men stuff is Hickman to the power of X.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah. Anyway, so, matter of fact, this will be a topic for next week, so I'm going to ask the question.
Oh, and you don't even want to go into it? Okay, go on.
But we're gonna,
it's your show.
We're going to put a pin on it. Because I want the listeners to think about this, too.
Okay.
You know, I love Elseworld stories. Elseworld stories are among my favorite comics of all time. In particular, DC Elseworld stories. I like the What If stuff and stuff, but I think the Elseworlds line did it the best.
For sure.
Now, today, Wednesday, October 16th, unless you're listening, in which case it is Wednesday, October 23rd, a new book came out, The Tales from the Dark Multiverse, Nightfall, number one.
Ooh.
In which Mr. Scott Snyder, with somebody else, Cal Higgins, retells the story of Batman Nightfall. Had Bruce actually come back, just like he did, but had Azrael decided to not allow Batman to be Batman again.
Yeah, and this is the first I've heard of this. I knew it was coming, but I didn't know any of the story points. And that sounds like a great what if issue. And when I first read Nightfall, as you well know, 2 years ago, 3 years ago, and I did think that that was going to be more of a bone of contention when I was reading the original story.
Yeah. So I'm looking forward to the rest of them. The next one up is Death of Superman. I think the one after that is, I want to say, Blackest Night. And they are doing Judas Contract.
Oh, wow.
And apparently the Judas Contract is very heavy on Terra, which for anyone that has read Judas Contract, you should probably figure out pretty quickly how that might go. Anyway, so I read this Tales from the Dark Multiverse, Batman Nightfall number one, the comic book with the longest title in the universe. And it was good. Don't get me wrong. It was good. I enjoyed it.
Who drew it?
I don't know. Let me see. It was Kyle Higgins, wasn't it?
He's a writer, not a...
Oh, yeah, he is a writer.
Yeah.
Who drew this?
Joliet's very own.
Oh, really? Yep. I didn't know that.
Yep.
Well, that's cool. You should tell him to come hang out.
I would love to hang out with Kyle Higgins. Come on.
I don't have the book in front of me, and I can't find the damn artist.
It seems like Snyder is starting to get his own stable of artists like Geoff Johns does. That's why I thought I would ask.
Yes.
It doesn't matter. Just, you know, I always like to give the creative teams when I can.
I'm telling you right now because I'm pulling it up.
How many of these what if issues are they going to be putting out? And are they just singular issues?
They're all one shots.
Man.
They're all one shots. Fernandez, where's the creator roll call in this book? I'm looking. Mm-hmm. I'm looking. Maybe it's like in the last page.
Sure.
Anyways, doesn't matter. The art's good.
God, I wish Marvel would do the same thing. I understand both of them are like, how do we get new readers? Well, this is not the way. But how do you pander to longtime readers or uber fans? This is exactly the way.
Mm.
I love it. I wish they would do all. I wish they would have 20 different story points. Yeah, let's go.
I think I read an interview about this, which I thought was interesting. Because, you know, Snyder's been doing this multiverse thing, right?
Yeah.
And he said the thing about the dark multiverse, which I thought was interesting, because these are almost like, you know how Top Cow does the pilot season stuff?
Mm-hmm.
Or they used to. I don't know if they still do or not. It's almost like pilot season stuff for DC books.
Yeah.
But it's mixed into the mythology of it. So, because it's the dark multiverse, these would be like things that heroes are afraid could happen.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Were things different. And if they fear it enough, then it actually comes true.
Huh.
Right? Like some Grant Morrison chaos magic.
It sounds like Convergence.
It does sound like Convergence.
Which I loved Convergence, but I understand a lot of people didn't.
Yes.
This is just an easier way to be like, well, Convergence, we sort of dealt with similar topics and similar scenarios. But people poo-pooed that. But let's just call it what it is. We want to redo Nightfall. Well, just this one little bit.
I think his thing with this is, let's like try new concepts and maybe bring some new characters in or different takes on characters. Mm-hmm. And if they work out well, then we just bring them into current continuity, right? Like the Batman Who Laughs.
Yeah, spin them off.
Yeah, spin them off.
I love it.
You do like it.
I think that's neat. Is it all his dark universe?
Yes.
Don't know if I like that as much.
Yeah.
Is it Black Label?
It is not Black Label.
See, I think those are the two. I understand probably Scott Snyder came up with this whole entire concept and other people are doing it, but it'd be so much better if it was Black Label, because then it would be in current, not continuity, but just it would be approached from a current writer standpoint and artist standpoint.
I got a creative team for you. It was on the last page.
Okay.
Written by Scott Snyder and Kyle Higgins, art by Javier Fernandez, colors by Alex Guimaraes, and letters by Clayton Cowles, with a cover by Lee Weeks.
Oh, I should have led with that one. But you know what I'm saying? Like, if they would have done Black Label, which is sort of a modern approach to comic books, but still sort of Elseworld, instead of Dark Universe, I think that would have been a more interesting approach. So, and I don't even necessarily need them to be one issue. Nor do I want them to go as long as Nightfall went. But guess what? Pick out little... Like, I would love it if Marvel did that and, like, we're going to retell the death of Gwen Stacy. Or retell, you know, Spider-Man and the black suit. Like, yeah, retell it. Let me hear, like, a different version of it. That's why I loved Zdarsky's Spider-Man through the decades miniseries that he did, because that's exactly what he did.
So I think the problem I had with this is that it's one shot and they're tackling like really big stories.
Yeah.
Right? So well, like sure. I understand that maybe you just want to introduce some new interesting ideas. But Nightfall was what, like 2-3 years worth of story?
But I will say the Nightfall one is the only one that you named off that could be done in one issue. Because you're only dealing with giving up the cowl.
Mm-hmm.
if he only hyper-focuses on that, that's a pretty fascinating 30 pages.
Mm.
Like, that could be told really, really well. Because you also have to assume everyone that's buying this, they're familiar with every event, everything that these one-shots are based on.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, you telling me about Lazarus, like the Judas contract, that seems like that's more than 30 pages.
Right?
The death of Superman, only if it's like, well, we're going to tell it from the cyborg Superman's point of view. So you only get a narrow slice of that gigantic event.
Mm-hmm.
That's fascinating. But
yeah,
but the dark universe, that's the thing that's like, oh no, are you serious? Oh no.
Yeah.
Cause I don't want dark versions of like all these characters. No interest.
Right. Yeah. Of course he had to throw in the Batman Who Laughs cameo in here. He's not in the story, but like in explaining what the dark multiverse is, like he had to put him in there. But I mean, like the story was cool. And so it starts off like, with that whole thing, right? Like Batman comes back after getting his back broken, mm-hmm. and Azrael's like, "Nope, I'm gonna break your back too. Bye." And then you find out what happened to Bruce, which is pretty gruesome. He is actually still alive. This book takes place 30 years after Nightfall.
Huh.
And I would have loved to see this as
So Bruce comes back,
mm-hmm.
but not in the timeline that we know. It took him decades to come back, or nope. He came back at the same timeline.
Yes.
The same amount of time. Azrael was already there, but instead of relinquishing the cowl, he does something to Bruce that flips it and makes him go underground for decades.
No, he becomes, he continues to be Batman.
No, I'm saying Azrael hurts Bruce Wayne or does something to Bruce Wayne to send him underground. And Azrael continues on to be Batman. Is that what I'm hearing?
Sort of.
Okay.
Let's see. Do you plan on reading this?
I'm going to read it when it comes. Well, not right when it comes out, but probably when all of them get collected. I'll read it.
All right. Do you want me to tell you what happens to Bruce?
You know I could care less about spoilers. Forget it or, by you describing it, will make me want to pick up the issue when it comes out.
All right. So, Bruce does not go underground to disappear. Well, he does disappear, but Azrael makes him disappear. He ties him up in, I want to say it's like a Wayne Tower. I'd have to reread it to see. But he ties him up at the top of this tower, and on the anniversary of their battle every year, he goes to visit Bruce. To try to get Bruce to admit that he is doing a better job being Batman than Bruce did.
Huh.
Also, Bruce is a torso and a head, because Azrael cut off his arms and legs.
So how does he get nutrients, feed himself?
He's hooked up to a machine with like a bunch of cables and stuff all over him.
So in other words, you're getting patted on the head of like, this is an Elseworld tale. Don't bring logic into it. This is a tale of fancy.
Yes. However,
I will say that's pretty twisted.
Yes.
I like the way Snyder approached that. It's really gothic horror.
Mm-hmm.
And it really fits Azrael, his character at the time.
It does.
Because he was off the rocker.
Yes, and he's still off the rocker.
That's pretty fascinating. Now I wish it wasn't one issue. I like that. I mean, it's almost like if you presented that story, Nightfall, to Edgar Allan Poe, how would Edgar Allan Poe write that?
Mm, I like it.
You know, it is definitely like hearing knocking from the basement or in the walls. You know, it's like, there is something real creepy and dark there.
Well, it gets even darker at the end.
Hmm.
Because Bruce is rescued by somebody.
Ooh.
A brand new character that's connected to an old character from Nightfall. They go after Azrael. Now you're saying to yourself, how do they do that? Bruce has no arms or legs.
Mecha suit?
Nope.
Oh. Does he become a bat?
Oh,
motherfucker! Really?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, this is when Snyder is fascinating to me. And maybe it's the way you're describing it to me, making me paint these pictures in my head. I hope he delivers it as well as I'm imagining it.
I think if it had been like a double-sized issue, it's oversized. Mm-hmm. But I still don't think it was long enough. Damn. Then they could have fleshed that out a little bit more. But yes, this new character and an old character that we know do something to Bruce that may involve some very advanced nanites that basically turn Bruce into, like, the spirit.
Weird. Weird. Mm-hmm. Now, is the artist Rodriguez? Is that what you said?
Javier Fernandez.
Does he ape Kelly Jones's artwork?
Not really. That's hard to do.
Why didn't they get Kelly Jones?
Man, dang it. I don't know if I would have liked that. Kelly Jones did, I think he did the Batman Spectre arc in Detective Comics a few months ago.
Okay.
And you can tell it was Kelly Jones, but something didn't translate. I don't know if it's like the coloring techniques that are used now or what, but it did not look as good.
Yeah, I think it's digital. My guess, because I'm only going off of what I've seen, my guess is it's digital color as well as fancy paper.
Yeah, it could be. It's like when you see Neil Adams stuff, you know what I mean? Like, if you look at Neil Adams stuff from the 70s, you're like, holy fuck.
Mm-hmm.
Especially if you know, like, what was before that, right? Like, nobody drew like Neil Adams.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But you see Neil Adams stuff now, and you're like, eh.
Yeah, yeah. I just, well, keep me abreast. I want to hear about some of these other one-shots.
All right, I will.
Because you know our podcast love Elseworlds tales, and I'm fascinated with this one so far. Yeah. So keep it going.
Very good. You have been listening to the Nerdy Legion podcast. But really, like, what's a podcast? This is just, we should just call the show Two Dudes on Skype.
Babble Olympics.
You can, of course, find Nick at Nick Wetmore. I am a Geekvine. The show is at Nerdy Legion. We're full of stories, so come back next week and get some more. Thanks for listening. Catch you then.